Hey, Robert.
Hi, Yaron.
So one of the areas where it seems like ingenuism is not really practiced, but maybe is the most important area in life for it to be practiced, is education. We seem to have kind of an education bureaucracy almost, where very little changes, experimentation. When it's done, it's not clear that the right lessons are learned from it. It just seems to be just very, very static and not as dynamic as an ingenuous environment would bring about. So what's your sense of kind of what drives this, and what could be done to really change this?
There's a lot to unpack with education because, we talk about learning or people talk about learning by doing. We talk about things that fit into the ingenuism framework very clearly, but they're not separated out. And so when we talk about education, what if we go through the lens of ingenuism, what we're really talking about is getting people connected to the bodies of knowledge that currently exist and getting them trained, prepared, inoculated with the idea of experimentation and discovery as a distinct part of learning, where you actually uncover new knowledge or you uncover questions and answers to questions that may already exist, but that someone else isn't handing to you. So we've got these different layers, and the existing it's a little inflammatory, but I'm just going to go ahead and call it the education industrial complex. It has evolved to provide only the foundational layer and not do, I think, a particularly good job of that from the sense of people retaining important information. So it's all about someone else telling you what's important and then you learning that material. And there's very little discovering how to ask questions and answer those questions from existing knowledge, and then to ask questions and answer those questions by creating new knowledge. So the first place we would start is to look at, if we wanted to make a big change, is look at how do we add those additional layers. And it's not simple. It's pretty simple to teach kids that 1 + 1 is 2. You just force them to memorize it and then use it enough that they remember it. And then, some of them are going to understand the basics of, why that is with 1 and 1 and 2, but others are going to see 1 and 1 and say, well, why isn't it 11? Which is a totally valid question that every, I think, kid needs to ask to really learn math. And then we could be less ambitious, and we could just look at, okay, if we're trying to connect, not just kids, people in general, but if we're trying to connect kids to the base of existing knowledge, how could we try new methods that would either succeed or fail, learn from those successes and failures, and have the approach evolve over time? Because if you look at how we educate students, it's basically the same as we were doing 500 years ago, and there's nothing else like that. We don't build houses the same way we did 500 years ago. We don't build boats the same way we did 500 years ago. We don't, but we educate kids essentially the same way, and perhaps worse in the sense
Perhaps
that when
worse, I was going to
you
say,
create a factory model, which is what the current education system is, it's very efficient at turning out large numbers, but it doesn't provide for any personalization or any learning and development. So you call it bureaucracy. I guess that's as good a word as there is. A bureaucracy makes sure you get a minimum result. And the minimum result doesn't really matter. What we really want is for every child to have the opportunity and then to succeed at embracing their inner ingenuism.
Yeah, and one of the challenges is that if even at that very basic layer, if what we teach kids is just to memorize and not to understand and not to see cause and effect and not to see relationships, then the 1 + 1 is just a memory. It's not a tool, and 1 + 1 = 2 should be a tool. they can then you can build algorithms for AI for. So you need an understanding and too much, and it's much simpler to just have people regurgitate, right? It's a lot less work. It's a lot simpler, but to have the kids actually gain an actual understanding of what they're doing and its relationship kind of to the world, that's the real challenge in education. And that's what we seem to be failing at, even though today we seem to have amazing tools at our disposal. As you said, tools that didn't exist 20 years ago, never mind 500 years ago. And yet we're underutilizing those. To the extent schools use technology, they often use technology to just regurgitate the stuff that before they were doing without technology. You've got an iPad to read instead of a book to read. But we've got tools that can really should be able to help, but it again is seems to be kind of stuck.
That's why it's so important to unpack everything and see what it is we're trying to do when we talk about education and what's actually possible. Because the default is to just do the same thing with technology. And we saw that in the pandemic where, you know, and I'm not saying, you know, having done it during the pandemic myself, I'm not saying it would have been easy to totally transform the educational system when forced to use technology in new ways. I think that's a too big of an ask, and it may not even be possible. But what the experience shows you is that the default response to technology being available is to use it to do things the same way, only with technology. And if we think about connecting to the students, whether it's in person or with Zoom, you know, that is a natural replacement. But what you can do with, you know, breakout rooms or things that would be very hard to do in the classroom, those are not automatically used. But what I think has the most upside and is the most frustrating for us is that when you have an environment like education, particularly for kids, where the education potentially can happen very, very quickly, you're in a realm where ingenuism can really make a difference because it's possible to learn, get feedback, recognize mistakes, recognize what's working, experiment, and to discover new ways. So to have an ossified education system where when you actually are testing the kids ongoingly to see how well they're learning, even if you're not, you know, picking, even if you're not defining learning or distinguishing learning in the way we'd want people, that's very frustrating because you don't have to wait till, you know, your kindergartner gets to be 40 to find out whether they learned anything in kindergarten. There are parts of what they could learn if you distinguish it out. You know, if you learn to ask questions and you learn to think creatively in kindergarten, that could impact 40 years later. But there's a lot that you can measure in the moment. And schools, you know, do that. They have tests, standardized tests that they use yearly or throughout the year. And unfortunately, that has just become something that is another dimension of learning. And it's really important to separate these out, which is when you're talking about learning, you're not talking about the test. So if you're testing, you have to remember that the test is not the actual goal or what you're trying to accomplish. And it seems like very quickly the test becomes all that matters. And the students pick up on that very quickly. Yeah. And as soon as students start thinking about the test as what's important, then they're not learning anymore, not in the sense that we would use the term learning.
So one of the things, you know, one notices, you look out there into the world and you see kind of some industries stagnate and not adopt kind of the ingenuous principles and not learn and not evolve, and that they have these, and I called it a bureaucracy because it tends to be top down, dictated from above. A lot of times, theories coming out of academia that are tried but never really evaluated because there seems like there's no incentive structure really to evaluate. Maybe it's more important to appease the leading voices in your field than it is to actually, actually get the students to learn something. Versus what where we see ingenuism applied the most and effectively is in kind of bottom-up organizations that are free to innovate, experiment, and are competing with one another, and that are getting feedback not just from testing their students, but also in a sense on the marketplace, which here would be parents saying, ooh, you're not educating my kid. Maybe I should take them somewhere else, which doesn't exist in kind of our top-down model that we have today. So, you know, maybe one of the things that should be done is really restructure the entire educational system to orient it and make ingenuism a more organic part of it.
You do need something. I mean, there's a reason bureaucracies evolve and they exist. They do serve a purpose, but they also tend to grow and overtake whatever that core purpose is and start squeezing out the other elements that are at least as important. And I think that that's happened in education. You know, my personal story is always how I learned to read was in an experimental program implemented in the public school out of Purdue University called ITA that took phonics to the extreme and actually gave you books where the words weren't spelled the correct way in English, unless it was a coincidence. They were spelled phonetically. So it made reading very intuitive and very easy once you understood the sounds of the letters. You didn't have to deal with all the weird exceptions and all the weird rules in English. And so I learned to read, and I can read very quickly. And I'm, of course, a terrible speller, and that was the downside. And, you know, back when I was in elementary school, that was a big downside. You know, today with spell check, maybe we should be teaching everyone with ITA. But it was an experiment that was then not rolled out en masse because it had this unintended consequence of killing my spelling ability. I would love to see it rolled out at least in small experiments like it was, you know, back in the 70s, in order to see whether you can get the same results and whether it really matters that people spell well when you have spell check and your phone is correcting your spelling even when you don't want it to. I think there was a time where ingenuism was, it had a presence in schools, and I don't see any evidence of that today. So a restructuring and, you know, doing that from Washington, D.C. seems unlikely to work. We believe in, here at ingenuism, that top-down rarely works. The fact there are so few examples of it working in a large, diverse environment, not in a startup company, but in a large, diverse, distributed environment.
I mean, I think those kind of experiments are still going on. It's not that I don't think ingenuism ever was really in education in a major way. The fact is that your program succeeded in some things, but it doesn't seem like they fed off of that. I think I learned to read sight C because I don't sound out words. I can't spell either. And I read very slowly. And, you know, reading's not that, I don't read fast at all because, and I often find myself misreading words because I'm assuming what they are rather than actually reading what they are. That's why. And so you'd think that over the last, 50 years, they would have taken your method and my method and come up with something better. But exactly. It seems like those two methods, you know, that doesn't seem to have happened. I just read a study, again, experiment in California. They took 70 programs where students were behind in reading. They applied the latest, I guess, phonics methodology on those 70 programs. Lo and behold, the kids are, you know, much better readers. It had huge success. Am I convinced now that that's going to be rolled out and implemented? Not at all. There's no indication of that. And this is where, you know, failure, this is one of the problems, is the failure is the kids fail, but the teacher never fails. The school never fails. There's no metric by which the teacher and the school fail, because they're somehow protected by this bureaucracy, by the structure. Whereas in private markets, which is the alternative, or one of the alternatives, there's a mechanism by which these entities succeed or fail, and the child is a customer. He's not. And the school will fail if it can't produce results.
Yeah, it's very important that there in Genuism that there's feedback. You can't learn by experimenting if you don't discover things out of that experimentation. And you know, there's a lot of ways that you can design and create feedback, but one of the least effective is self-feedback, so self-evaluation. And I think that's primarily what you see in education. You get some feedback, and then you decide whether it's good or bad and how you're going to respond to it without any other inputs. And that's very common in education. And there's a tendency to try to create distance from self-evaluation by creating a objective test, by again dictating a particular solution. They have to do well on the test, and then implementing that for everyone. So one size fits all, top-down directive. And those have unintended consequences. We're seeing them. I think they're potentially more of a disaster than not having feedback, because I think most teachers are interested in getting better. It's just a question of whether they are, you know, how much time and effort that's they're willing to put in to do that. And that varies a lot. But if you have something, and obviously school choice is one of them, if you have something where the feedback is distinct and clear, and the response is evaluated as well, then you know all of human experience suggests that's where you really get learning, experimentation, and progress.
And here we're talking about the learning of the teacher and the learning of the school and how to best deliver the material. And then, of course, they want to teach the kids how to experiment, learn from their experimentation, and improve. It's hard to teach that when you're not doing it yourself.
That is correct. Once the whole system becomes adjacent to, at best, Genuism, then you're just going to drift away. Because if you're thinking of learning as the test at the end of the year, then there is no experimentation except how do I get better scores on the test? And then you've completely missed the point. But the incentives, you know, work in the wrong direction. If you're evaluated based on how your students do on the test, you know, it completely screws up. And that's what top-down solutions almost always do, is create an environment that is worse than they were trying to solve. But emergent solutions, there are always stumbles on the way, and you are going to have examples of schools that try things and it actually hurts the kids versus not doing anything for 1 year. But if there's true feedback and learning, then you get past that very quickly. And that's where it's so exciting about, you know, having an AI style, it's called Sidekick for teachers to start, where they can take the students through material, the AI can take students through material based on what has worked in the experience of the AI. And it doesn't have to be test feedback. It can maybe mastery of actual material, because the AI is involved at the individual level. And there are going to be some, you're going to need adult supervision at first. The teacher's going to play a really important role. And presumably the teacher's going to be able to retire and probably early and let the AI just run it, because as mistakes are made, that's where you learn. And that's the lesson that is often lost in school, where mistakes are just bad and you get a lower grade. And the learning is supposed to happen first, but that completely flips the reality of learning, which is you have to have the freedom to experiment, to try things, to make mistakes in order to really learn, particularly to retain things.
I guess the thought that came to my mind, the scary thought that came to my mind, is what I don't want is a centralized AI that's teaching all kids the same thing and monitoring them and feeding all that data. What I want to see is some competition and some again learning, right? Not all AI is going to be the same. Not AI is going to function in the same kind of, with the same algorithm, the same kind of way. What we need is to kind of, in a sense, liberate education to experiment, test, try, and have as many AI tools as possible so that we get so we learn what works and what doesn't.
Yes,
it's going to be new and it's going to be messy, right? Early on, it's going to be messy.
It's going to be messy. And you can imagine Washington, D.C., the education department deciding that they were going to create an AI for schools that would, it fortunately would be such a disaster that it would never actually get implemented. But that would be scary. What would be scarier is if other AIs were outlawed, because you can't have a neural network that you can't really predict and might have biases in it, teaching your kids, which is, of course, exactly what you have with every teacher in the country, because it's part of being human. So I think that we're going to see AI tools. I don't know if and when we're going to see them in real, serious, personalized education, powerful learning tools. I don't know if we're going to see them in the traditional education system, just because it's so far removed right now from from ingenuism where you would embrace that. But at some point, parents are going to rebel, because it's one thing to pay a private tutor $50,000 a year, or to pay a private school $15,000 a year. But if you can get access to a Google teaching AI for $50 a month for your kid, and it does a better job than public school, then you're going to see the evolution that I would love to see, which is learning happening distinct from kids socializing. That learning is a fundamental core element of growing up, but socializing is too. And while we pack them together into school, it damages learning and damages socializing.
Absolutely.
So basically, camp in the morning and 2 hours of AI in the
AI tutorial
for the rest of the day. That would be my ideal option for kids.
All right, sounds good. And we'll keep coming back to the education issue, because it's so crucial, and there's, I think, so much upside in having an impact on how education delivered, and technology is going to make all the difference.
Agreed.
Thanks, Robert.